Chapter 10, The Far East, Ancient China, Lao Tzu and the Silkworm. The people who lived in Mesopotamia between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers thought they lived at the very center of the world. They called India the East because they had to sail east to reach it. They thought of India as a strange and distant place. But there was a country that seemed even stranger and was more distant than India, China. To the Assyrians and the Babylonians, China was the Far East. It was all the way on the edge of the world. The people of China and the people of the Fertile Crescent didn't know very much about each other. But even though they lived far away, the Chinese people chose to live near a river, just like the Egyptians and Babylonians and Assyrians did. Ancient people needed rivers to survive. The people of China first lived between two rivers called the Yellow River and the Yangtze River. The area between the rivers was called the Yellow River Valley. The earliest people of China settled between these rivers in the Yellow River Valley and grew crops, especially rice, because it grows well in wet ground. At first, the Chinese lived in separate villages, just like the people of Mesopotamia. But eventually, a great leader united the different villages of the Yellow River Valley into one kingdom. The leader who united the Chinese villages was named Huang Di. He lived so long ago that we really don't know very much about him, but there are plenty of stories about his rule. Legends say that Huang Di first discovered medicine and taught the Chinese people how to cure illnesses. His wife, the Empress Lao Tzu, discovered that silkworms make their cocoons out of silk threads. One day, the Empress Lao Tzu sat in her garden beneath the mulberry trees. Outside the palace walls, she could hear the noises of trading caravans, the sound of camel hooves on stone, and the cries of street merchants selling candy, jewelry, and tea. But Lao Tzu's walled garden was quiet and peaceful. The breeze moved the leaves of the mulberry tree above her.
"Min Lai," she called to her maid, "bring my lunch out here. I will eat in the garden today."
Soon Min Lai brought out the Empress's favorite meal, turtle meat with garlic and ginger, candied fruit, rice, and a pot of steaming, fragrant tea. Lao Tzu breathed in the rich smell of tea as she poured it into her cup. She lifted the cup to her mouth. Something splashed into it right in front of her nose. She looked down into her cup. There, floating in the hot water, was something small and round and white. She glanced up into the branches of the mulberry tree. Hundreds of little white cocoons were dangling just over her head. The cocoons of the silkworm. Inside the cocoons, the silkworms were changing into moths. Soon they would chew through the cocoons and fly away.
"Look, Min Lai," she said. "A silkworm cocoon fell right into my tea. Let me get you a fresh cup, Empress Lao Tzu,"
the maid offered.
"Wait," Lao Tzu said.
She carefully lifted the cocoon out of her cup. It seemed to be made from a thin, bright thread, wrapped 100,000 times around the silkworm within. The hot water had begun to unravel it. Lao Tzu pulled gently at the end of the thread and drew it out longer and longer and longer. She rose from her seat and walked through the garden, trailing the thread behind her. It was so long that she circled the garden with it a dozen times. The thread was so light that it floated on the wind, and it shone in the sun like melting silver.
"If only I could weave this into cloth," Lao Tzu marveled. "What a robe I could make for my husband, the emperor." "But it is too thin to weave,"
Min Lai said.
"Pick me another cocoon, Min Lai,"
the empress said.
"We will unravel another thread."
All afternoon, the empress and her maid unraveled the fine, shining threads from the silkworm cocoons. They twisted the threads together until they were as thick as a thread of cotton, and then the empress called her dressmaker.
Can you weave a cloth from these threads? She asked.
I have never seen threads like these,
the dressmaker exclaimed.
They're as fine as hairs, but as soft as the petal of a flower.
She took the threads away and wove them into a cloth that shone like water in the sunshine. And from that cloth, Lei Tzu made a robe for her husband, the emperor. When he saw it, he gasped with wonder. From now on, he said, we will call this silk. The secret of making this wonderful cloth must never leave the palace. Only the royal family can know this treasure was yielded by the silkworm cocoons. So from then on, Lei Tzu and her court made the wonderful cloth called silk. They fed the silkworms on trays of mulberry leaves, waited until the worms wove their cocoons, and then carefully unraveled the cocoons for their precious threads of silk. Soon China became famous for its silk, the cloth that no one else in the world knew how to make. The pictograms of ancient China. We don't know much for certain about Huang Di or about the rulers who followed him, because they didn't leave any written records about their empires. Almost everything that we know about these very ancient Chinese rulers has been passed down in stories and legends from person to person over thousands of years. We don't know what parts of the stories are true and what parts were added to make them more interesting and more exciting. We do know that the Chinese went on living in the Yellow River Valley and that they grew rice, raised silkworms, and tried to defend themselves against invaders. And we know that a new leader came to power hundreds of years after Huang Di. His name was Tang, and his family was called the Shang family. Tang became king around 1766 BCE. His family would rule the Yellow River Valley for the next 500 years. In China, this was called a dynasty. One family keeping control of a country for many, many years, passing the crown along from father to son, from brother to brother, or from uncle to nephew. We know much more about the Shang dynasty than we do about the rulers who came before it. During the rule of the Shang family, the Chinese began to use bronze. They made weapons, wheels, and farming tools out of bronze. These tools and weapons made of bronze didn't rot away like wooden tools. Thousands of years later, archaeologists discovered the bronze tools and weapons buried beneath the ruins of Shang buildings. The bronze weapons tell us that the Chinese who lived during the rule of the Shang dynasty knew how to fight with bows and arrows. They used chariots when they attacked their enemies, and they wore shields and armor to protect themselves. The farming tools tell us that they grew wheat and mulberries as well as rice, and that they used plows pulled by horses to farm their fields. But that's not all the Shang dynasty left us. During the rule of the Shang, the Chinese began to use writing for the very first time. And we can still read this writing because it was often engraved on bones and on bronze plaques that have lasted for thousands of years. At first, this early Chinese writing was made up of pictures. These special pictures are called pictograms. Picto means picture, and gram means writing. Pictograms are words that look like pictures. For example, here's a pictogram for sun. It's a picture of the sun with the sun's rays shining out at both sides. The pictogram for water looks like this. Can you see the waves in the water? Here's a Shang dynasty pictogram that means house. Here is a Shang pictogram that means bow and arrow. And here's a more complicated pictogram that means soldier. This soldier is carrying a halberd, a weapon that has an axe on one side and a dagger on the other. The Chinese people used these pictograms to write simple messages. The pictograms look almost exactly like the words they represent. Farming in ancient China. Most people who lived in ancient China were farmers. They raised animals like pigs, chickens, and cows. They grew grain just like people in Egypt and in Mesopotamia.
But the people of China grew a kind of grain that the Egyptians and Mesopotamians couldn't grow. Rice. Rice will only grow where the ground is very wet for most of the year. The ground in Egypt and Mesopotamia was too dry for rice. But near the Yellow River in China, whole fields stayed wet for months and months. Rice could grow there. Qin was 7 years old. He lived in ancient China with his father, a rice farmer, his mother, his grandfather, and his little sister. One spring morning, Qin woke up before sunrise. The room where he slept with the rest of his family was still dark, but Qin was too excited to go back to sleep. This morning, he would go with his father to work in the rice fields for the very first time. He hoped that it wouldn't rain, but he couldn't see out past the stiff paper that covered the windows. Qin got up and tiptoed out of the room, past where his parents, his grandfather, and his little sister lay sleeping on their pallets on the floor. He opened the door as quietly as he could. From his front steps, he could hear the roar of the Yellow River. The river was fuller than usual because of the spring rains, and it was so noisy that the people in Qin's little village could hear it a mile away. Qin looked up. The sky was just beginning to turn a beautiful, clear pink. A spring breeze was blowing. It was going to be a beautiful day. He could hear the pigs rooting and grunting behind the house, and the chickens scratching around the edges of their pen. Qin fed the three pigs and the four chickens every morning. He decided that he would feed them right away before his father got up. Then all his chores would be finished. After he fed the animals, Qin washed his hands, combed his hair, and dressed. He picked up his sleeping mat and put it outside to air. Then he knelt down beside his father's pallet and whispered,
"Father, are you awake? Are you well this morning? Can I bring you water or food?"
Qin did this every morning. It was his duty as the oldest son to make sure that his father had everything that he needed. Qin's father opened his eyes and laughed. "Are you ready to go to work already?" he said.
"Can we go right now?" Qin asked eagerly.
"Wait until I've had my rice and tea," Qin's father said, getting up.
Qin waited impatiently by the door. His mother was grinding rice into flour. She would make the flour into little sweet cakes for dinner. Qin's baby sister played on the floor with her favorite rag doll. Finally, Qin's father finished his breakfast. He led Qin down the hill towards the river where the rice fields stood. Weeks ago, the Yellow River had flooded out over the rice fields. It spread water all over the flat land, deeper than Qin was tall. Then the water began to flow away back into the river, leaving soft, fertile mud from the river's bottom all over the ground. But water still stood ankle-deep all over the rice fields. "Do you see these tiny rice plants here in this special bed?" Qin's father asked. "Today I'll be moving them out into the field so that they can grow larger. Your job will be to pull weeds out of the field while I plant." Qin rolled up the legs of his pants and waded out into the water. The water was ice cold. At first, his feet hurt from the cold. Then they started to go numb. He had to put his hands down into the water to pull weeds. His fingers were stiff with cold. But he kept working. He could see his father planting rice seedlings up ahead of him. His father never stopped working. Qin was determined to work as hard as his father. The sun rose up higher and higher, and Qin's back and head grew warm in the sunshine. But his fingers and feet ached with cold. Finally, his father called him back to dry land. "You've worked like a man this morning," he said. "Let's go back to the house for our midday meal." Qin followed his father back up to the house. His back hurt from bending over. His feet were wet and chilly. His hands were covered with cold mud. But he was proud of the work he had done. Back at the house, his mother had fixed him a special treat, meat to go along with his rice, and his father poured him a cup of hot, steaming tea to warm him. Chin huddled beside the clay stove, listening to his grandfather tell about the great floods of long ago.
"When I was a boy,"
his grandfather said,
"the spring rains came down and down and down, day after day, until the Yellow River rose up and overflowed its banks. But it didn't just flood our fields. Great rushing floods swirled down on our village and swept our houses away. We were left homeless."
Chin shivered. He hoped that the Yellow River would never flood his home. Note to parent. According to legend, Huang Di ruled around 2690 BCE. Lei Tzu is also known as Xiling Ji. The Shang dynasty ruled from 1766 to 1122 BCE.